morning, everyone. My name is Savannah. I am Senator Costa's press secretary, and I am so happy to welcome you to tonight's live event. Thank you so much for taking time out of your evening to join us. Tonight, I'm here with Senate Minority Leader Jay Costa from the 43rd District, who will be taking your calls as he discusses the budget address made by Governor Jack Shapiro earlier today. Senator Costa will also be taking questions on this topic during the discussion. As a reminder, if you have a question you would like to join the conversation, please press *3 on your keypad to participate. So without any further ado, I'm proud to introduce State Senator Jay Costa.
Well, thank you very much, Savannah. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for participating in another one of our telephone town halls. As many folks know, we like to do these 3 or 4 times a year, and I thought it would be important tonight as we kick off our budget process here in Pennsylvania, talking about Governor Josh Shapiro's budget address earlier today and highlight some of the things that he's talked about. And after we run through that, I'll be happy to take questions on any of the things we discussed or any other issues that are important to folks who remain on the line. What I want to do is start and talk a little bit about some of the successes that we finished up last year. We finally concluded our budget process at the end of December, mid-December, and I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that we did over the course of last year's budget. Probably the most significant thing that we did was our investment in education, in public education. In excess of $1 billion was invested in public education. Most significantly, the highest amount ever we provided to K-12 funding through our basic education funding formula. But we also did additional resources, additional dollars into special education programming, additional dollars for pre-K counts program and Head Start and many others. Those were important aspects of the budget last year. But we did a number of other things as well. With regard to our schools and our mental health situation, we added $100 million to our school districts across Pennsylvania for mental health programming in our schools, which is important. We also added resources, which is referred to as a student teacher stipend. We have a shortage of teachers in Pennsylvania. We're trying to incentivize them to be able to get engaged and want to work in the classrooms with our kids. We put together a stipend for student teachers going forward, and the governor's going to continue that as we go forward. We're also in the place of free lunch program. Every child, we have a universal free breakfast program. Every child in Pennsylvania will have the opportunity to have free lunch, a free breakfast going forward. We also did a $175 million investment into our school facilities. That's been an issue around the Commonwealth where we have a lot of old buildings, a lot of buildings filled with lead and asbestos and the like, and that's going to be important as well. So as we go forward, we're going to ask you to, I'll get into the budget conversation, but I want to set that premise from where we're going to build upon in this upcoming budget and talk a little bit about that. I'm going to turn it back to Sav to give some instructions about how folks can participate.
Absolutely. For those of you who are just joining the call, thank you so much for spending some time with us this evening. Senator Costa is going to do a quick recap of the budget address that the governor gave earlier and go through some of the highlights of that budget address. If you have a question that you would like to ask of Senator Costa during tonight's discussion, please press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to your question as soon as we can. Again, that is *3 on your keypad. Back to you, Senator Costa.
Thanks, Dad, very much. So let me start with the premise of where we stand financially in Pennsylvania. We are very fiscally sound. We have right now $7 billion in our rainy day fund, which is allowing us the opportunity at some point when we need it to be able to access those resources. But we also have an ending surplus of about $7 billion this year. So June 30th, we'll have $7 billion in the rainy day fund, end of the year with a $7 billion surplus. And that means that we're going to be able to meet our expectations for our revenue for this year, but we continue to carry the $7 billion excess for a total of $14 billion we have available to us here in Pennsylvania. Governor Shapiro has recommended a number of ways in which we can roll out a general fund budget and asking the legislature to take a look at what he's proposing. Again, in the education space, probably the highest priority where we'll be working on as we go forward relates to the investment in education. As folks may remember or may have heard, earlier last year, the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court struck down our education funding formula, the way we funded our schools for K-12. The court said it was unconstitutional in a 900-page opinion. The court charged us with the responsibility of going forward and figuring out the best way to do that that meets constitutional muster. It's important to note that Democrats nor Republicans appealed that decision to the Supreme Court. So there's a consensus that we have a problem with our funding system, and we have an opportunity and really a mandate to address it. To that end, we put together a school funding commission that looked at all the variables about how we fund our schools and came up with recommendations that were significant. The goal is to be able to fund over the course of 7 years in K-12 funding about $6.1 billion. The way we achieve that is by making significant investments in what's referred to as the adequacy gap. The adequacy gap was really the basis of the lawsuit that we were spending resources in different districts across Pennsylvania at different levels, and there were districts that needed that simply aren't able to meet the adequacy gap, and therefore they're not getting the results we want them to have. So at the end of the day, the committee recommended that we do $6.1 billion in an adequacy gap and combine that with tax equity. So the governor's proposing that we do approximately $750 million in basic education, the most highest amount that we've ever had in K-12 spending going forward. In total, it'll be about $1 billion when you add in the adequacy piece. Between the adequacy piece, the tax equity piece, and the governor's also proposing across the board every school district share in a $200 million increase in the basic education level. That's about 1.02 in terms of how much money we're going to be putting into basic ed. But beyond that, he wants to put $50 million into special education funding, a significant increase, a little over $32 million in pre-K program is an increase in early intervention programs as well by $17 million, and also making sure that we increase career and technology programs across the Commonwealth. Those are some of the things he's proposing. And in addition to the K-12 education space, the governor's proposing that we put into place reforms particularly to our cyber school situation. We have a situation in Pennsylvania where our cyber schools are really draining the activities and the resources from our public schools, and the governor's proposing that we cap the number of amount of money that folks school districts pay to our cyber charter schools at $8,000. That's something that's definitely needed and something we'll be continuing to work on. In addition to the school funding money I just mentioned, again in the education space, the governor has recommended that we build upon the $175 million in facilities that we did last year by doing another $300 million in school environmental repairs. That means we're going to continue to do what needs to be done in that regard. We found out through this study that we did that we have an excess of over $1 billion in need with respect to our facilities across Pennsylvania. And we're really starting to scratch the surface with the $175 and now the $300 million. Finally, the governor, as I mentioned earlier, last year we did $100 million in school mental health programming. The governor is recommending that we do state resources for $100 million in the school safety or mental health program. So this will be another $100 million going out to our school districts to address the needs as it relates to mental health funding. In addition, we're going to do $50 million in school security measures, as well as $11 million in targeted school grants for public schools that are working in that space as well. Those are all important aspects of the higher education spend that the governor is recommending. Probably the second leg of the most important part of the governor's budget address in the education space relates to how we're going to deal with higher education. Which referred to as our community college system, as well as our state system of higher education. That would be the IUP, Edinburgh, Cal, Slippery Rock, all those universities are part of that system. Excuse me. Right now they're as part of a state system, and then we also have our 15 community colleges. The governor's proposing that we bring them under one umbrella group. They would all retain their individuality as a board of governance at the community college level. Each one will have their own governance. Each one of the state system will have that as well. But there will be an umbrella group that's going to be able to serve over them as sort of the state system of higher ed governing board. In addition to that, the governor's recommending that he's going to increase that spending by $130 million going forward. So those two combined are going to receive an additional, I think it's $127 million in investment in community colleges and the PASI under this new system. As it relates to the state-related universities, Pitt, Penn State, Lincoln, and Temple, the governor is recommending a 5% increase, which also will be important. The unique thing about how we're going to spend these resources, it's going to really require us now to do something that we haven't done before, and it relates to performance-based funding. So we're going to get a base, but over and above that, if school districts meet certain criteria, or universities meet certain criteria in terms of what we lay out as a part of a matrix, they'll be able to receive additional funding as well. And I think that's almost like a challenge grant to folks, to these universities and colleges to do well along those lines. Those are the two main issues in the education space. The other area the governor highlighted in his budget address was the economic development space and things that we need to do in that space and what he wants to try to be able to achieve along those lines. What we learned from talking to folks from around the country These folks, site folks who look in to find out sites for businesses who want to locate in the Commonwealth or any Commonwealth, that we're woefully short in various aspects of the economic development program. The governor wants to invest in five key areas that he's identified: energy, life sciences, manufacturing, robotics and technology, and agriculture. Those are the five areas, the five sectors that he wants to work in and be able to stand those areas up, those industries up, and be able to work to make sure that we are doing what's best to be able to generate activity here to grow our economy and grow our jobs. To that end, the governor has recommended that we take things that we look at. Probably the most significant thing is relates to how we process permitting, for example. What we've learned, it takes way too long to get permits through this Commonwealth. When businesses want to locate here, it takes time for them to be able to do that. In addition to that, we know that we don't have prepared sites. We're not ready for businesses to come to us and say, we want to be able to put together a site, we want to build a building that's going to need X, Y, and Z space, and that we simply don't have those pads ready. So one of the things we're looking at is making a significant investment in creating these types of sites. A lot of our other states around us, Ohio in particular, have put billions of dollars into preparation of sites. What I mean is preparation of sites and being ready to go, it relates to what you need to have ready, a site-ready pad. You have the infrastructure already in place. You have the electric. You have the plumbing and the water and sewer. You have the roadways maybe as well. So whenever a company comes to the Commonwealth and says to us or comes to the region and says, we need so many acres or we need so much capacity to do a size of a building, we open up the book and we show them all the sites that we have prepped and ready to go. That's a major difference in terms of where we are at right now. That's really going to be important as well. We're also going to develop a $25 million, what's referred to as a Main Street Matters program. That will be a fusion of resources that will go to our main streets across Pennsylvania and making sure that we're making investments along those lines to not only stabilize our main streets but also invest them so we're prepared to grow our economy along those lines. We're also looking to make an investment in entrepreneurs. We're putting $20 million to begin to work better with our local businesses, our small businesses, to be able to try to create, sustain in entrepreneurs and also grow them as well. But those are some of the main areas that we're working in the economic development space as well. In the public safety space, the governor talked quite a bit about, as I mentioned to you earlier, about our schools and making sure that we have resources in our school, $50 million for the for school safety program, but also making sure that we have resources to provide for gun violence prevention programs, for example. The governor's recommending a $60 million increase in violence prevention programs, 37 of which will go to the violence intervention program that we already have in place across our Commonwealth, but that's a significant increase to address those types of things. We also have gun violence investigation and prosecution, where the governor is also putting resources in to lend support to our district attorneys and our law enforcement around the Commonwealth to be able to do what needs to be done to be able to prosecute folks along those lines. Those are important aspects of the gun safety and violence program. Beyond that, the governor is going to be funding another cadet class, four cadet classes. This current year, we're funding four cadet classes, and now we are going to be funding four more along those lines. Those are important investments that we're going to be able to make along those lines. We're also going to continue to fund the Office of the Attorney General and increase their funding to be able to sustain the program that was rolled out last week in Allegheny County that provides for the Joint Local and State Firearms Task Force, currently operating in Philadelphia, now operating in Allegheny County. We need resources to be able to support that, and the governor proposes doing that as well. We're also working in the housing space. That's an important part of the work that we do going forward, and I think I'm looking forward to being a part of that conversation. We already put into place in 2022 and now implementing it now in 24 and 23 we did, is the whole home repair program. You may remember we did $125 million in that space. Allegheny County received about $14 million to be able to drive out a whole home repair program. That allows individuals to apply for a grant to be able to fix up their home for the things that are needed to be able to allow someone to stay in the home and also be able to continue to stabilize neighborhoods and communities. Things like fixing the roof or putting a new roof on. Things like fixing the furnace or weatherizing a home with new windows and those type of things. Anything that requires folks to make it easier for folks to stay in their homes is what we're working on. And that's what that program did. The governor is recommending, and Senate Democrats have been a part of this program, $50 million in another state whole home repair program. The money we did before was federal money. This year we want to do a $50 million state investment along those lines because we know the program is widely successful, and in fact, it's been oversubscribed tremendously. That's one of the things we're going to do. In addition to that, we are going to put resources, $5 million in the government emergency housing support to provide flexible support to our counties to be able to, and local governments to support folks who are in the housing crisis. We have a great program in Pennsylvania called the FAIR program, which provides support for housing initiatives, but also allows housing type programming where individual organizations support and help folks find the appropriate level of housing. Right now, we do $60 million a year in the housing program, or the FAIR program. The governor's recommending that we do up to $100 million in 4 years, so we're going to increase it by $10 million each year. So this upcoming year, we will be at $70 million. And I can tell you that those are really important resources that we provide to a lot of folks. As we go forward, we're going to make some other changes as it relates to a human service programming, which I think is extremely important, making sure that we continue to invest in those programs that are important to our communities, primarily in the mental health space, increasing community-based mental health programming by $20 million. That'll be county-based. But also we're going to set up about $6 million for 5 community-based programs for individuals being discharged from institutions that don't require higher level of treatment along those lines. And we're also going to establish and maintain a walk-in mental clinic for mental health crisis centers across Pennsylvania. Those are just some of the things we're going to do in that space. So folks, I've rambled on quite a bit. I'm happy to take some of your questions at this point in time and ask staff to address that. The last thing I want to talk about is an announcement that we participated with the governor the other day, and that was related to public transit. Governor is recommending, and I agree, and we think we need it desperately, is to make a significant investment in public transit. And what the governor recommends is that we increase the sales tax contribution from 4.4% to 6.25%. At the end of the day, that's the amount of money would be about $282 million spread across the Commonwealth to our transit agencies to allow them to ensure that they maintain the number of routes that they have and that they don't do layoffs as well. For Allegheny County, that means a little shy of $40 million, but it's important resources along those lines. That'll be annually going forward, but it's something that's very, very important along those lines to be able to do that, which we think is important. The other part of that is, so we're just not going to do transit. We're going to make investments in roads and bridges. The governor recommends that we take another $125 million away from funding the state fleet, funding it from the general fund, and moving it back into the motor license fund, which will then allow us to have $125 million available to be able to do more road bridges work, but also drawing down the federal dollars as well. So that $125 becomes a significant match for federal projects, the federal resources for state projects that we would work on to maximize those resources. So now I'm ready to take questions, Sav. I put long-winded there.
It was long-winded, but it was thorough. Thank you so much for walking us through some of those big points in the budget. I'm so excited. It sounds like there's a lot of really good stuff in here. For those of you who joined us very recently, thank you so much for spending your evening with us. If you have a question that you would like to ask of Senator Costa about the current budget and the budget proposal that the governor laid out, please press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to your question as soon as we can. I'm going to kick it off with a question that we got online about adult-use recreational cannabis and how that factors into the budget. Senator Costa?
Yeah, the governor recommends that we do pass adult-use recreational marijuana. Whether or not we have the will in the Senate or the House to pass it remains to be seen, but he has budgeted a significant amount of money, primarily in year two, but first year, I think it's $100-some million this year. We know that it's going to generate a significant amount more than that, but at the end of the day, year one, I think, if we do pass it, it will become effective July 1st or certainly thereafter, and then we got to figure out how that's going to be deployed. But that conversation will continue over the course of the next 6 months, and if we don't get it done by budget, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't do it sometime in the fall.
Excellent. I'm very excited to hear more about that as we continue to go through this process. Next, we're going to go to Michael in Pittsburgh. Michael, ask your question.
Hi, Senator. Thank you for all the great information. It looks like the Shapiro administration is bringing some great things to the Commonwealth. Thank you for the time and the presentation. My question is, with Allegheny County and the City of Pittsburgh having the prolonged experience of the property tax issue, is there anything in the budget to resolve that challenge?
So last year, I failed to mention we made the most significant change in property tax impact, primarily for our seniors and folks who are on disability. When we increased certainly the amount of money that the maximum amount for folks who receive the property tax and rebate up to $1,000. So that was like a $350 increase for those individuals. The other part of that is we generated a much greater opportunity. We increased the income limit from $35,000 to $45,000, both for renters and homeowners. So more folks were eligible to be able to receive the payments, and they also increased the size of the payment. That was one. The second thing is, as we make these investments in our education, as I mentioned earlier, the governor is recommending over $900 million this year in education spending that will make its way to school districts across Pennsylvania in year one. Given that, the school districts will possibly have the opportunity to, particularly those that are receiving a tax for part of the tax equity program, a number of school districts in Allegheny County will be eligible for that, will receive a formula-based number. They should be able to lower their property taxes along those lines. So that's kind of where that conversation is heading. We have to ensure if we make these sizes of investments that I've talked about, that there's language that's coupled with that language, is language that is going to require some type of reduction or some type of limitations on property taxes going forward.
Thank you, Senator. Really appreciate it. Next, we're going to go to Karima in Rankin. Karima, you're up.
Hello? We can't hear you, Karima.
Hello, Senator Konta. Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you so much. So mine was more of a comment than a statement. I wanted to thank you and Governor Shapiro for always being on board with union. Thank you for understanding the importance of transportation. Education being the priority. I totally get it. And I appreciate you putting that money back into our future. Now, putting that money back into education, we actually moved the city. So we are going to move the children from home to school. So the funding is a little bit or a lot of bit bigger than what I think anybody thinks of. You think of education, more money for teachers, more money for schools, more money for programs, but the money is also allocated for them to have bus passes. So those that can't afford, the communities that can't afford school busing, it comes over to public transportation. So Local 85, definitely on board with you and our senator, and we just appreciate you guys understanding the importance of public transportation and moving our city forward in all the economics that you guys are putting forth.
Well, thank you very much. It's very kind of you. You're exactly right. We, you know, as I mentioned at the outset, we have $14 billion available through this process. If we fund every single thing that the governor's laid out, and I've only scratched the surface with the number of items that he's talked about, but he has a very bold and comprehensive plan to address a number of areas, and you know, the budget will be available on our website if anybody wants to go and look at it. But we'll still have an excess of $11 billion available for future years, and I think these are the resources that we have. And as a Commonwealth, we have an obligation not to hoard these dollars. We're well situated. We're going to hit all of our revenue projections this year, and we have the past couple of years. In fact, we're going to exceed our revenue projections this year and even go higher than what I think we anticipated. And the goal is to be able to make thoughtful, strategic investments that are going to bring a return on our investment. Certainly investments in education bring that return on investment, but also the investments in economic development also do the same thing. They bring back resources. They bring businesses here. They grow jobs, which grows the taxes people are paying and grows the economic impact in communities. That's what's very important here as well. So thank you again.
Thank you, Senator Costa. We're going to go to an online question, and then we'll keep taking questions from folks on the phone. For those of you just tuning in, just another reminder, if you'd like to ask a question of Senator Costa about the budget address that the governor laid out today, press *3 on your keypad, and we'll get to you as soon as we can. Someone online asked about any plans to raise the minimum wage in this budget. Do you care to talk about that, Senator Costa?
Yes. Again, one of those things I forgot to talk about. Yes, the governor, again, recommends that we raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And also $9 an hour, I believe, for tip workers. That's essential here in Pennsylvania. As folks know, every single state around us has a much higher minimum wage. In fact, it's an embarrassment that we are still at $7.25. every state. The lowest around us is West Virginia at 875, I believe. But Ohio, New York, Maryland, New Jersey, Delaware, you name it, they've all increased their minimum wage, some as high as more than $15 an hour. The governor has indicated that we need to do this. We agree. We've tried to do it a number of times. We just can't get Republican support to be able to get it across the finish line. At the end of the day, I do think by June 30th, if not by the end of this year, we will have increased the minimum wage. The question becomes whether or not we're going to get to $15 an hour or not. That's what the debate is really centered around. But if we are able to do that, again, we increase the tax revenue coming from folks who are getting that increase in terms of the wages. So no one should have to live in the poverty level that they're living in when they're working for $7.25 an hour. And I know I hear from a lot of folks saying, oh, well, nobody's making $7.25. Trust me, there are people who are making minimum wage out there. Oftentimes there are women, sometimes most instances single women or women with multiple children, and it becomes an issue. So we have to make sure we take care of our workers and ensure that we do that.
Thank you so much, Senator Costa. Now we're going to go to Alex. Alex, go ahead.
Hi, Senator Costa. This is Alex in Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh. My question pertains to bridge repairs. You know, when Governor Shapiro addressed the I-95 collapse in Philadelphia, he did a great job of, like, rushing right to the scene and getting that major highway fixed as soon as possible. And the same is true of the bridge over Frick Park that fell, the Fern Hollow Bridge. I was really impressed how all the public works, all the contractors, everyone involved fixed that bridge in 11 months. It was really impressive. There's a bridge I take a lot. The route from Squirrel Hill to Oakland to uptown to downtown has been blocked for a year. The Morris Bridge over Shenley Park and Fern Hollow is closed. And they say it's going to be 2 to 3 more years until it's fixed. I'd like to see the state use money from the federal government's Build Back Better program to, like, rush to these projects. My real question is, what, like, specific infrastructure projects are you working on in Allegheny County?
So thank you very much for your question. That's a great question. With regard to that particular bridge you're referencing, that, I don't believe that is a state-owned bridge. That is a City of Pittsburgh bridge. They are taking steps to address it. It has not met the sort of crisis level that the Fern Hollow did as it relates to the nature of that situation, but also as it relates to I-95. Those were bridges that were deemed to be significant places that needed to be fixed, and the City of Pittsburgh situation with the bridge you mentioned is one that is in the works of being done. I think there's an effort to be able to expedite what's taking place there. The I-95 situation was only temporary fixes for a while. In fact, tomorrow I think we are going to extend the emergency declaration to be able to do that. Same way on Fern Hollow, that took him more than 11 months to get done because it was deemed to be an emergency situation given the nature of the collapse and the use of that highway. The City of Pittsburgh bridge you referenced has not been deemed to be an emergency, and therefore we cannot expedite the process of making sure that we get contractors on site, get engineers on site, and all the folks that participate in the process of fixing those things. We have to follow the procurement schedules that are laid out in law and in regulations. That wasn't the case in those two projects you mentioned. By virtue of the emergency declaration, we were able to bypass that stuff and make decisions very quickly and hire people very quickly to expedite that project. But I do know that that's one the city is interested in moving forward quickly, and we're working with them to try to do that.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we're going to go to Omar in Penn Hills. Omar, you're on the air.
Hi, Senator. Thank you for taking my question. I believe earlier you touched on funding school meals for all Pennsylvania children. I don't think, you know, it should be a controversial issue to ensure that all children in Pennsylvania have at least one, if not two, good meals. I know that many kids around me in my neighborhood are struggling, or from families that are struggling. My question is, this proposal to fund school meals, is that only for public schools, or does that also cover students attending non-public schools as well?
I believe it's more broad-based. We did it last year, and we're going to do it again this year, and this year we're going to increase it. But I think it's part of the free breakfast program we have in place. In fact, we're going to increase it along those lines to bring those free breakfasts beyond just the winter of the school year, but also into the summer months as well. So we're trying to do what we can to help fund programs that feed our kids the minimum breakfast, if not breakfast and lunch, and expanding it beyond just the day-to-day at school activities. So I believe it's for everyone across the Commonwealth.
Thank you so much, Senator. Just as a reminder to everyone online, if you would like to ask a question of the Senator, you can press star 3 on your keypad, and we will get to you as soon as we can. We're going to take one more question online. Someone asked about what is happening in the area of women's health and maternal mortality. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, excellent question. In women's health, the governor was very clear as it relates to wanting the Senate to address the issue regarding maternal health and ensuring that we put additional resources into that space. So I'm trying to look real quick to see exactly how much he proposed, but it's a high priority along those lines for the governor. So that's something we're looking at. He's also looking to do an increase in medical assistance programs to increase the rates for family planning fees, which is important as well. But the governor's clear about wanting to do a program first in the country, or first I'm aware of, relating to feminine hygiene products, making sure that we have them in schools. We heard a lot from organizations and teams and school folks that the lack of access to these type of supplies is an important issue, and the governor wants to make sure that we put resources along those lines into school districts to be able to provide for those type of products. But beyond that, I think the governor insists that we continue to work in a couple other areas to make sure we're not going to take any steps that are going to address the issue of women's reproductive rights and challenge us to not do the things that folks have tried to do here in Harrisburg. Beyond that, we are looking at making sure that we address the situation with child sex abuse cases, although it's not directed just to women's health, but others as well. The governor is calling upon us to pass legislation along those lines to allow those folks who have been harmed and injured through that process to be able to go back into court, avoid the statute of limitations, and move forward. So those are just a couple of things in that space along those lines. So maternal health, I think the governor wants to put those resources there, which we think is going to be important as well. We're heightening the awareness of what needs to be done and do those programs as well.
Thank you so much, Senator Costa. Next, we're going to go to Allison. Allison, you are on the air.
Senator, I'm Allison Wardrip, and I had such fun with you at the log cabin on Finley Park. You were talking about space available. In Oakland, between the Royal York and the Heron Pumping Station, there is a building that they want to turn into a community center, which is very needed. And there's a plan, there's a budget. It has been before Erica Strasburger is aware of it. We have presented it several times, and it would just revitalize that whole area. And your programs are so wonderful. Education is much more important, but this would make a real instant difference, and it would be easy to do because the space is there and ready.
So it sounds like it needs an infusion of economic development resources, and that's one of the things the governor talked about. As I mentioned to you, for example, that sounds like to me that may be something that would fall into the Main Street program, that we'd be able to do something along those lines. I also know that we are now deploying resources unrelated to the governor's budget, broadband community-based resources that are available, that the application window is currently open right now, and we should have folks look into applying in that space to be able to provide programming that creates that connectivity, but also refurbishes these places to allow folks the opportunity to have access to the internet at locations along those lines, like community centers. So that could be a part of what could be done along those lines. But the governor's making significant investments and wanting to do more in the economic development space, particularly as it related to community-based activities that allow these type of things. It used to come under what was called our Keystone Communities Program, be able to do that. So I think those are resources and programs that would allow us the opportunity to do that.
Thank you so much, Senator Costa. I believe next we are going to Foster. Go ahead. Are you
Hi,
ready?
This is Lovie Foster. Lovie Foster?
Yes,
is
go
this
ahead.
Me? Okay, my name is Lovie Foster. But yes, thank you for this conversation and
and sharing and summarizing the budget. I was curious about other aspects of mental wellness that you're going to, or mental wellness that you'll invest in terms of schools and families, and also what prevention services you'll be funding and what type of leadership will be over that. You did touch on some things that I think are super important to mental health, and that is equity in terms of things, you know, basic needs. So I really like that you'll invest in things like toiletries and things like that in schools. So if you could maybe add to some of what you said about mental health and prevention. Thank you.
Sure. So, I mean, it starts with mental health resources, as I mentioned earlier, going into our school districts. $100 million be deployed. Every school district will receive some money, I think $100,000 to start with, and then the other, that's about $50 million, and the other $50 million is driven out under a formula that goes, you know, based upon a couple factors. So that'll start with school districts there. Governor's also making sure that we're putting more resources into community-based, what I call community-based mental health programming. $20 million, I believe, in addition to increased funding for the county community-based mental health program. But also we want to do $5 million to create 5 community-based programs for individuals being discharged from institutions when they don't necessarily have the level of treatment needed to stay in a hospital. Also, we're going to do these walk-in mental health crisis centers. They're called mental health crisis stabilization centers. That's going to be important as well. Those are the primarily main things that we're going to be able to do. We want to do more to increase, quite frankly, what I'll call more community-based mental health programming through the block grants as well, but also through organizations, and we're going to continue to pursue that. We did do $100 million, recommended $100 million a few years back, but those resources end up making their way to our schools. But we're also doing money, as I mentioned earlier, in some of the public safety programs, in the violence prevention programs. We're doing space money in that space as well. And although it's not directly tied to mental health programs, it's the nature of those programs that allow for opportunities to folks to participate, to do different things, and all the things we talked about in terms of violence prevention programs, I think is going to be important along those lines. So I wish there was more I could tell you along those lines. We are going to continue to fight for that $100 million in community-based mental health programming, because the $20 million that's going into the counties is great. Another $20 million over what we did last year, by the way. But also, we know we need to do more on the ground in the community-based organizations that aren't necessarily, you know, all tied to getting resources from the county. So we have more work to do in that space, and the governor, I think, is receptive to that. We just have to keep pushing it.
Thank you so much, Senator Costa. And I'm going to take this opportunity to plug that if you want to follow along with the Senate budget hearings, which will be taking place not next week but the week after, you can live stream them in real time at pasenate.com/budget if you want to learn more about the nitty-gritty of what's in these budgets. Next, we're going to go to Christine. Christine, go ahead.
Hi. Question concerning arts in Pennsylvania. It seems like Pennsylvania likes to invest in large corporations and offer them grants, but the individual filmmaker doesn't have really the opportunity. Pennsylvania offered a $5 million grant last year, and the entire grant was given to one filmmaker who has already had a personal net worth of $80 million, which left zero money to the rest of the filmmakers. What steps are in place to prevent this from happening again? And how do I, as a filmmaker, have any access to this grant? Whenever I call the department, I don't even get a return phone call.
Yeah, that's very frustrating, and I do not support that carve-out and make sure that it works. You know, I mean, I did support increase in the film tax credit, but the carve-out was something I was not supportive of. But at the end of the day, you're right. We have to find a way to get it better to more independent filmmakers across the Commonwealth. I think you're referring to the folks out of Southeast PA who had, long story short, carved it out. That was disappointing. We just put out $15 million of federal money we passed back in June of 22. All the awards just went out to arts organizations across the Commonwealth. And they were smaller grants ranging from anywhere from like $10,000 to $12,000 up to like $95,000 for some of the larger institutions. My preference there would have been if they'd all be small institutions or entities as opposed to the larger entities that have much larger budgets. I think the impact of that $15 million spread across many more and higher amounts to a lot of organizations would have been money better spent. But getting back to your question about the filmmaker, we got to keep our eye on that and make sure we don't let that happen again and figure out a way, and I'll make sure there'll be something I look into. I know that folks in Allegheny County, Don Keefer and others, were not happy with how that played out. So we certainly have it on our radar to address that going forward.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Greg in the Hill District. Greg, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. How are you doing, Senator? You guys are doing good. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Hey, I just wanted to ask you a quick question. Living in the Hill District, I see a lot of youth who are, like, walking the streets. We have facilities like the Thelma Lovett Y, and we have the old Y up there on Francis and Center. Now, I was just wondering, do we have any state or local funding available that we can maybe get some free memberships for these kids to get them off the streets and maybe start some mentoring programs in these places?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that goes back again to some of the money I mentioned earlier. We have this community violence intervention programming, and we also have other programs that engage the community, primarily through the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency. So that would be, I believe, if one of the organizations would come forward and apply to PCCD for resources to be able to provide what you just described for opportunities for kids to get off the street and be engaged in activities. That's directly related to what needs to be done. So we're looking to do, I think, $11 million is going to go into resources for communities who are most impacted. And they can be used for community projects, whether it be light improvement or improving a shared space or investments in organizations that are fostering those type of programs along those lines, as you described. So we do have resources and a budget recommended for that. We just got to get that piece across the finish line going forward.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Next, let's go to Lisa in Homewood. Lisa, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. I have a question. Where in the budget does this fall where we can be able to get homes that have been condemned, has been condemned for years? The neighbors have continuously contacted the 311 system regarding getting them torn down. What part of the budget, and how can we bring more attention to the homes, or should I say houses, because homes are where people live, houses that have been condemned and empty for years? They already have a condemned sign in the window. We've been told repeatedly that there's no money in the budget for them to come and demolition those homes. Where can we get attention drawn to that?
So the program that I mentioned earlier is called the FAIR program. That's a program that provides resources to local municipalities, but also organizations that want to work in that space. So clearly, I know I worked last year with Wilkinsburg, for example, to provide a significant amount of money to do demolition in the community. The responsibility for demo and homes that have been condemned lies with the municipality, whether it be Pittsburgh or whatever area those that you live in. They're responsible for that. They can seek resources from the state to be able to do that. The governor's recommending this year an additional $10 million in that fund, so we'll go from $60 million to $70 million, and over the course of the next couple of years, we'll be up to $100 million a year. So we have resources that we do to do that now, and we want to be able to continue to do that as we go forward. There's another program that's not part of the governor's budget address. It's called the Local Share Account Statewide. We're also working with communities to be able to do that as well, largely our municipalities, to be able to draw down resources to do local demolition. The problem is that each demolition is about $20,000, and there's a process that folks got to go through to be able to acquire that title, to be able to do that, or put a lien against the owner. But it's expensive to be able to do that. So to do 10 homes, you're probably talking about $250,000. And oftentimes, small communities especially don't have the availability of those dollars. That's why we provide those resources at the state and local level.
Thank you so much, Senator. We're going to turn to a quick question from an online participant. They wanted to know a little bit more about what you're doing about debt, both student loan debt and medical debt. Can you speak to anything in the budget on those two topics?
Well, the latter question on medical debt, something I've been working closely with Dr. Arvin Venkat, the House member from up in the North Hills. He's been a tremendous proponent, and we have legislation that passed the House that would address the medical debt situation. The governor's proposing this year in the budget, he's adopting Dr. Venkat, his legislation, and it will provide $4 million to be able to address medical debt. Now, medical debt will not go to individuals, and it won't go to third-party entities, but it'll be able to pay down the debt that's owed to a healthcare facility. And then at that point in time, that debt will be wiped off debt creditors off the books of that debtor. So that's kind of how that's going to play out. So we're hoping to get $4 million and get the program started and continue to grow as we go forward. With regard to the student debt, we're working to be able to do more by making college less expensive. That's one of the big reasons what we're working on in the governor's space. I mentioned to you the governor talked about combining the state system and also the community colleges. In addition to that, he's recommending that we put into place that are only going to cost people $1,000 per semester to go to a college or go to a state system school. That's huge. So that'll really work to eliminate debt for those students who are going to start a community college and transition to the state system schools. Beyond that, for those who are going to go to state system and community colleges, but also other college universities, like state-related or private colleges and universities, the governor's recommending a $1,000 increase in the fee of grant program, which is a significant increase along those lines. So those are ways that we're trying to head off student debt. I don't believe at the state level we are going to forgive debt, student debt, at this moment in time. While there are proposals to be able to do that, we talked about it when we were had other resources available to us. But I think that's something at the federal level that I think is taking place. And I know that President Biden has done a lot to try to get that across the finish line, but has run into some complications with the courts and the like. But I do think that we are trying to make efforts to make education more affordable for folks.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Gina. Gina, go ahead. You are on the air.
Hi, Senator. Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
I wanted to know, I joined the call a little late, if you had presented any information on senior citizen housing in Pennsylvania, being, you know, we have an aging population, and is a certain amount of money budgeted for new buildings for seniors?
So, yes, we are continuing to make investments in senior programming. Let's start with what we already did last year, which will continue again, will be the increase in the property tax and rent rebate program, as well as the eligibility being up to $45,000 both for renters and for homeowners. We're also making investments in additional $11 million in a new program called Aging Our Way PA, a program that will implement a master plan for older adults to focus on caregiver support and streamlining resources. So taking steps to try to keep people in their homes as long as they can, as long as they want to, and providing resources to do that and also streamlining your process. We're also looking to increase the amount of money that we're paying folks who are caregivers in Pennsylvania to make sure we do more along those lines. We're creating a division for the state lottery fund within the Department of Aging that deals with Alzheimer's disease and related diseases. That's going to be important. We're putting $15 million more into the state lottery fund to support the PACE program, which is an essential program as well. We're increasing the amount of money we're putting into our long-term facilities by $700 some million, and that's what, and then as I mentioned to you, the property tax and rent rebate expansion. As it relates to more housing units, we are looking to do we'll be doing the next round of our what's called our PHFA low-income housing tax credit program. It's largely looking to seniors. We're doing a number of those facilities in our area. We have one going up in Edgewood. We have one over in Wilkesburg as soon as going to be going up on Penn Avenue, and several others that have already been done. They're creating new units as we go forward. I met earlier today with County Executive Sarah Numerato. They have a plan to create 500 units in 500 days, and we're working closely with them to be able to achieve that. That would also provide additional housing for our seniors and other mixed families as well. So we're working in that space to be able to do that. Finally, we're working to try to increase what's called the mixed-use tax credit that will provide for our main streets, essentially where you have retail on the first floor and housing on the second floor, providing resources along those lines through a tax credit program that will invigorate resources there, invest resources there to be able to create additional housing, again, with an emphasis on housing for our seniors. So we have a number of areas that we're working on right now that's going to be important both in the skilled nursing centers, but also in housing in terms of the units as part of our the work that we do through PHFA, which is our Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Linda. Linda, go ahead. You are on the air.
Hello. Has there any thought been given to or allotment given to a COLA for retired school teachers?
So, yes, we did talk about it. You may know we have the pre-Act 9 folks. Those are the folks who missed out on the 25% increase in the retirement benefits. So we're trying right now, we're focusing on them. There is legislation that's been pending for quite a while that would look to provide a COLA to our retired teachers and other retired workers that were not, you know, over the course of years have sort of fallen behind. That is a multi-billion dollar investment that we'd have to make as a Commonwealth to figure out, that we'd have to generate the will to be able to do. So right now we're focused, the primary focus is on pre-Act 9 folks, so depending upon when folks retired, whether or not they would be included in that particular grouping. But at the end of the day, that's something we recognize, that the retirement benefits that folks are receiving each year gets diminished by the economy, and we have to take steps to address that and recognize that. But there is legislation pending along those lines.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Robert. Go ahead, Robert.
Yes. Is it Robert?
Robin is supposed to be my name. Is here. Can you
hear me? Sorry, Robin. You had a
I was wondering, like, that's not my name.
we're reading the screen. It says Robert. I apologize.
Oh, no worries. That I'm like, that's not his name. So maybe it's, you know. Okay. Hi, Senator. Thank you so much for what you shared earlier. I especially am grateful for the education focus that you have offered and how everything else actually really goes into it. And my question, I'm a former literacy and academic coach for Pittsburgh Public Schools and now I'm an education consultant, but are you aware of the bill HB 998 and SB 801 that really helps us to make sure that the literacy practices that are happening can happen, that PDE has put out and all of that? Are you aware of that? We really wanting to get that bill, those bills passed so that we can have instruction in the classroom that is sound and really helps to eliminate those equity gaps and low special education rates that we're seeing. Where students aren't proficient by fourth grade, and so currently we're declining in Pittsburgh, in Pennsylvania, period, with those proficiency rates. And what is, so that's my first question. The second question, just briefly, is what did you mean by the performance-based funding?
So the performance-based funding part would be really directed towards the higher education institutions, being able to look at factors as to whether or not their graduation rate with regard to students, whether or not they're graduating students in areas that we need individuals to be working in and graduating in, for example. Those are just a couple of examples, but that would be primarily related to higher education funding. On the education piece for K-12, the basic education area, the governor has proposed a significant increase along those lines. As I mentioned, 736 to target a district to address the adequacy issue, the shortfall in adequacy, as well as, which I think is important as well. Beyond that, that's just this year. That would be the first of 7 years that we will be doing something along those lines to bring us back to adequacy where we need to be. And that is the conversation that the Basic Education Funding Formula had around literacy. My colleagues in the Senate Democratic Caucus worked hard to continue to advance literacy and how we need to address that. And those resources will be coupled and be part of that conversation that school districts will be receiving. If this goes through the way we described, some of our school districts will be receiving a significant amount of money, and tens of millions of dollars to be able to make investments each year in their schools. And it will be compounded as we go forward. So at the end of the day, over 7 years, for example, Woodland Hills may be looking at $35 to $40 million across the board. There's opportunities and encouragement and not a mandate, but a discussion about making sure that we provide resources to address the adequacy issue going forward.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Chuck. Go ahead, Chuck. You are on the air.
Hi, Senator. Thanks for your information earlier, particularly on the economic front.
Yep.
And I also wanted to say, thank you for demonstrating, showing folks what leadership looks like, visiting us here in Lincoln Place. With our recent mine subsidence for problems for our neighbors. Thank you.
Yeah, I was just down here on Saturday morning at the community, at the Presbyterian Church, too. We'll be back again.
So my question, that was my statement. The question is, and I did hear what you said about the economic spread around all those different areas. What about some of these manufacturers with the computer chips, like our friends over in Columbus? What are we doing to, reel them in? Because we have the water. We have the workforce. We have the other things, that the infrastructure that these giant fab facilities need, and those are just awesome facilities for our folks.
Yeah, you really nailed it, because that was the wake up call for us. What occurred in Ohio with Intel, and how they pursued that and how they worked through that, and we need to do more of that here. And that's precisely why the governor proposed the economic 10-year plan that he put into place that he outlined today in his budget, specifically as it relates to manufacturing and technology that needs to be done, something that he's going to work to stand up along those lines. We're going to do, as I mentioned earlier, $500 million bond infusion to develop those paths to be ready for those companies that want to come, whether they be the high tech we talked about, whether they be maybe in energy or whether they be a robotic or life science, whatever they might be. We need to be prepared to have that place for them to go. That's first and foremost. And then we need to take the steps to be able to ensure that we're able to get them here and make it easier for them to transition the business from somewhere else to get here. That includes processing, the bureaucracy that needs to take place, how we have to shorten that timeline along those lines, how we deal with permitting both at the state and local level. All those things are part of that conversation. But you mentioned the areas, the one area with manufacturing, advanced manufacturing and others. That's exactly what this is designed to do, this bucket of resources and the processes that I mentioned, to put that into place so we are prepared to accept those folks and encourage them to come here so that they know that they have the pad, they have the water, the sewer, the permitting. We already know they have the resources you mentioned. We've got to provide maybe some infrastructure stuff there, but we have the workforce, which is probably the most significant thing that we have here, which I think is really important as well. So you raised a great point, and that's what the governor's 10-year plan is proposing to do, and I really think it makes a lot of sense to be able to position us well to be able to recruit those companies here. And we have the universities here as well. And we have, when you think about what's taking place on Second Avenue, Technology Drive, what's going on down at Hazelwood Green and so many other sites, we're well-positioned, well-prepared. We just need to be able to have the tools in place to be able to attract these folks to come here. We've already taken steps to address our business tax climate. We lowered our CNI last year. We began a process to do it over the course of 2031 to go from 9.99 to 4.99. We're in our second year along the lines of doing that. That's been a big win for us. We're also looking to take steps to the net operating loss carry forward provisions, making reductions there. So allowing, again, great appropriate business climate, business tax climate for companies who want to come here and not reject us, but also have the other parts of that equation that we need to go forward.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, let's go to Dennis in Penn Hills.
Happy New Year to you. Haven't seen you in a while since the Chinatown Inn.
Yeah, right.
I have two questions for you. As a Vietnam veteran, is there anything in the budget to make the quality of life better for us veterans? The second question is, poll workers are not being paid enough. We're living in some horrible times now, and poll workers, I called Executive Director Fitzpatrick last 2 years. Never even returned my call. Can you give me some updates on that?
Sure. On the poll workers, we've tried to do legislation that would encourage our counties to spend more in that space, and we can't get them to increase the amount. I think folks are there from like 6 in the morning to 9 or 9:30 at night, and that's a long day, and we don't. It's probably barely making a minimum wage. We have to take steps to fix that. I think we're increasing the amount of money we're giving to our county officials to be able to do election worker stuff. I don't think it's enough to cover what needs to be done, but we tried to set a minimum amount that counties would pay. Oftentimes, the counties simply don't have the resources in the election department to do that, but it's something I support and have voted for in the past and will continue to advocate for. This budget does not have anything specifically related to that along those lines, so that's one of the things that we need to look at. With regard to the veterans proposal or the things, I know the governor wants to make enhanced investments in some of the veterans' homes that we're doing. So we'll be providing more money in those spaces along those lines. I'm trying to grab the veterans line real quick if I can, but that's something I know that we'll be able to do going forward. And it's more of a broad-based, and then all the other human service programs that that work in that space that allow folks to be able to access the program. But the Veterans Affairs, we're going to increase by 9% overall. Probably the biggest increase is going to be veterans' homes, where we're going to impact the quality of the veterans' homes as we go forward. That's something that's important, but we're going to maintain funding in all the other areas as we go forward. Yeah, we're going to put more resources, as I mentioned, into our veterans' homes. We're going to put money in Civil Air Patrol, more money for our National Guard. But as it relates to veterans, the biggest thing is going to be establishing a veterans' outreach program and also have new walk-in outreach centers across the region to be able to allow families, your members and families to come in and figure out what resources they may be available, what may be available to them. So we're going to expand our outreach efforts along those lines to assist veterans, particularly those who are trying to access benefits, as I mentioned. And, of course, the veterans' home increase we're going to spend as well.
Thank you so much, Senator Costa, and I fear that brings us to the very end of our time. Would you like to say anything in closing?
Yeah, we have a number of folks. First of all, thanks, everyone, for being on the call with us and spending time with us. I hope you find this discussion informative. I know I threw a lot at you, but there's a lot to this budget as we go forward. As I mentioned, it's a $48 billion budget request, and that's just the state side. When you layer in the federal money, it's probably close to $97 or $98 billion. We will be allocating. We will go through our budget process. We'll have appropriation hearings here in Harrisburg over the course of 3 to 4 weeks, and then we'll come back sometime in mid-March to begin deliberation on some of the measures that we have going forward. So there's folks who've asked questions. If you want to stay on the line, our folks will take down your questions, and then we'll get a written response back to you, or maybe I'll give you a call back or something along those lines. So we'll reach back out to you and address the questions that you have. Meantime, as mentioned by Savannah, our budget proposal, the governor's budget proposal, and also our talking points and what we're working off of, a summary, I should say, is available on our website, on my website, for folks to access. We want to go read sort of more of a narrative as opposed to a line-by-line item, which is also available there as well. So thanks, everyone, for participating. I really enjoy these discussions. I hope you do as well. We'll be doing another one probably as we get closer to the budget process in May. Thank you very much. If you need anything from our district offices or Harrisburg here, we're always available. You can go to our website at senatorcosta.com, or you can just simply call our district office in Forest Hills, 412-241-6690. Thank you all very, very much.